Session number 22623, room 9.
We
landed at Taranto and found ourselves at Tivoli, just outside Rome. Well, we were there for some time while they waited and decided, while the powers that be, the corps commanders and the army commanders, decided what army or and what unit and where corps we would be posted to. Eventually, we were posted. While we were there, everyone that wished to was received at the. At least you got lorry, but a lot of them did. I didn't. Went up to the papal palace, and the old pope put his laden on those that wanted to do it. But. I didn't go because the liaison officer at that time had been our original Roman Catholic padre at the original landings. And I believe I've stated before, he used to tell the most filthiest and horrible jokes that I ever knew, and I couldn't understand why he should stand and introduce his to be the liaison officer between the Pope and all the masses of British troops which would be going and being received. So that, I couldn't stomach that, so I never went. Eventually, after various times and being on red alerts and blue alerts and this sort of thing, it was decided where we should go. And of course, they then decided, General Lees had then decided on the attack on the Gothic line. And we became part of one of the corps that was to take part and do this business. And we had took all our divisional colours off of their vehicles and off of our sleeves. And we moved by night to Assisi, and that was to fall anyone that saw it. And from Assisi, we then put all our black caps, sewed on our black caps, and painted all the black caps on our vehicles, and back again. And the next thing we knew, we were at Urbino. That's like the Oxford or Cambridge of Italy, if you remember the university thing. And loads of tanks and all ability on the side of this hill, I always remember it. And one morning, in the early hours of the morning, shells began to fall. And somehow or other the Germans had got to wind, obviously, they were there. I've never seen tanks move so fast in all my life. And we moved too, very, very quickly. And on foot, we found ourselves marching then towards the Adriatic coast. We were now back in 8th Army. And we marched, this would be in August or September September of 44, hot month out there. With all our gear, marching across country. The Colonel, Jock Cleghorn, who is our Colonel now, the 9th Battalion, and the O Group, his O Group tech headquarters, had gone on ahead. And the second in command of the battalion was one of these chaps that had come out from England, had been at Worley in a training boat. He was a regular fusilier officer, but he, like many of the others that were there, you will remember at this stage, we were nearly all new people. There's only the few of us that had got back from Anzio, and that were the nucleus of any company on the battalion, new officers, and the second in command, who was then taking his battalion all over this cross country towards the Eight Echoes, was this Major Lloyd. And he was a stickler. He was a stickler for doing things. Your pack had to be packed this way, three pairs of socks and this, and you had to have Bren magazines in here, and everything had to be good. When you're at war, that, all those things for you, it doesn't go that way. It just doesn't. Things don't go that way. You don't march, or we. I mean, you. It just doesn't work. And there he was. We marched for an hour, and then we stopped. That's how you do in the drill orders over here. And you put your feet up so that the blood runs back down here, and you put a guard up there, and this is that. We were going into battle again. I mean, a lot of the older chaps knew then. And the chaps got very fed up with that. You know, they really did. And what with the heat of the day and the dust. Round about 4 o'clock, we had got onto a road near, I think it was a River Murano or something, it's the name. And in front of us, we saw the Brigadier and the COs, our own CO, and all these COs at the side of the road. And we were stopped momentary then. And eventually, they were being given orders to... We'd had nothing since we'd had our early breakfast, so the blokes had just rested an enormous few minutes like that. They'd tramped over uphill and down dale, and with this also keeping strictly and up, annoying them, you know, I mean, you just don't do that. I mean, over here, no one would smoke marching along. You smoke a pipe, you were allowed in those days to smoke a pipe. Still in this country, we could smoke a pipe, but you couldn't smoke a cigarette if you're on a route march. But out there, yeah, I mean, it went by the board. If a bloke wanted to smoke, he smoked as he went along. And that sort of thing. Anyway, they were being given orders, and eventually it was orders which eventually led us to... we got to get up this valley, somehow or other, the orders which we eventually sort of had was that we were to do a night march, push on and push on and push on, not stop for anything, push on and push on to get up to the end of this valley by daylight. And with there, we'd have cut off all, quite a lot of the German army, because they wouldn't have been able to have got through. Anyway, our orders, we had no maps, we were new into the area, no officers or nobody had been able to look over the ground or anything. Any of the orders were, we were to push on. The bridge was blown that we would had to have gone if we to keep to the road. The bridge was blown. And of course nothing could have got. We'd only just in the area, all new, this sort of thing. The blokes, this was their first big battle that they would have seen, all these new chaps. And their first time in as infantry. And anyway, so I say, eventually, having received those orders, we continued on. I mean, just carried on. It just, the march carried on. And the instructions were to do that. And Scott Elliott, the brigadier, said that we'd be on our own. There'd be no support. They couldn't bring the guns up, and the mortars couldn't come up because they couldn't get across the rivers. And of course, it would probably be 24, 38 hours before the REs could get up and put a bailey across. So you'd be on your own. So that meant to say all we'd got was just what we carried, and Bren guns and that, but no support. Of course, our colonel, he didn't like it at all, but there you are. He gave us orders, and he put his orders out, and our B company was put forward. And away, and we went. And of course, we had to cross another river, and it was a dried out river in the seasons, in the summer seasons, riverbeds dry out there, and perhaps next time the water's made another one somewhere else from all the mountains, and it was dry. You always bear in mind, it's the first time these blokes, and in night time too, fed up, they'd been marching all day long and were still carrying on all night. We crossed this riverbed, and we before we got to pass through villages and the eerie with the doors, windows flapping and that sort of thing. And we couldn't understand as we went on. Out there they have little hayricks that they build up on sticks. We kept seeing them, you know, this one would catch fire here, and you'd go along and another one would catch fire. Well, what we used to do normally, it would be the task of the leading platoon for one of the blokes to stick, as they came to those sort of thing, to ram his rifle and his bayonet into the middle. But our orders were to push on and push on and push on, just off of nothing. So that wasn't done. What was happening, obviously, is there would be a German in, and that was the signal they were doing. If we'd done normally as we'd done, it'd have been a dead German back there, or you don't know, gutturally we'd have heard him yell out or something. But no, that's all, but it was funny, ever so eerie. Well, we carried on. We crossed this river, wide river bed, and somehow or other, the companies got mixed up. One of our platoons got mixed up with another company. Although we were the leading, supposed to be the leading company. As dawn was breaking, we'd got across the river this other side, up this valley, and we were on this coast road, at the side of it. It was breaking daylight, and bearing in mind we had no maps at that time. We were in strange country, absolutely strange country. I mean, there you are. That was our first big main battle gonna be since coming back to Italy. And anyway, we got onto this road and going along it, and suddenly we've come on part of this other company, and one of our platoons was a bit mixed up with them. Anyway, we were lead company, so we eventually sort of manoeuvred and got ourselves in front to be point company again. We hadn't gone very far. We had a motorbike, the mist right across this driveway, there was some misty. We heard a motorbike start up, you know, and roar off at the front. Obviously, it was a German scout or something had either heard the noise, that's what he'd heard, the scabbling of noise across the river, you know, and that sort of thing, and knew that something was happening, didn't he? And it was obviously a forward scout or something, and going back into what turned out to be Croce, his village, obviously. Well, a little while later, all hell broke loose. And all we could do was to clamber up this hillside, and we were now off, the river was run through there, and we were on the road up this hillside, and try and dig in. And as daylight broke, we looked across, and there was this big town, which on this hill here, a town on the hill, which turned out to be Germano, with a big big tower on the side there. And well, there we are, we sort of got dug in as much as we could. Things have been happening around the other side of this hill. The battalion, the other part, it was just us company on this side. The colonel sent the company and the other battalion were making an attack on this village that we didn't know, but we eventually did find out was Croce, which was round on the other side. And of course the Germans were there in some considerable force. And get on very well. The attack didn't, and that sort of thing. Now all this being our area, but we didn't know nothing much about that. We knew there was battle going on, that sort of thing on that side, but we were exposed, and the Germans had a lookout, and there's church tower right across there. So in technically speaking, you couldn't put your head up out of there because a sniper or something, or they shelled you across there, and you had quite a few castles. Anyway, to cut long story short, this town, it had to be taken. It had to be taken. Croce had to be taken. And, of course, at the specific time, other troops had been sent to take Germano, but hadn't been very successful. The battalion hadn't been successful. The Germans were there, up in the town in force. In Croce, apparently, we found out afterwards, because I told you before, shook hands with the adjutant, the German adjutant of the troops that were opposing us. When, in 1999, we went back to Germano, that they had rebuilt, and were naming a street after one of the Queen's colonels. And so, of course, not only had they invited us back, they'd invited some of the Jerrys, who'd been over a long time, and I met this and shook hands. I've got a photo of him shaking hands, and we were able to. He had a wife who spoke English and that sort of thing. So she was a bit of a battle axe, but she could talk anyway. We did go out that same night. Our company was ordered by the colonel to patrol while to make to divert attention from another attack that was going into the village of Croce, was to make a diversion up across this dried river bed business, and that where the Germans we knew were. And my company, Stan Warner's company, which was B, which was included me, was ordered to patrol as a battle patrol. Well, again, these chaps, had we been with all of our own blokes, they would have known, because they'd have learnt on the other aspects when we were on the Fifth Army side and that sort of thing, but they wouldn't. And it only comes with experience. It only comes with, you can read and you can, it only comes by actually being there and something happening. But you've got to make a decision and do it at the time. And if you've made a good decision, well, that's good. If you've made a bad one, it just doesn't go well with anything. Anyway, it was one of our platoons, and I was the bloke to take it out. And, we would have gone out normally in slippers. You see, that's how you do the silence. Leave your boots back there and go out for silence. But if you can imagine army boots and all this dried river bed with rocks and gravel and sand, and these blokes had not known it, the noise was terrific. In spite of it all, and of course, they were, you go out silently, but they were, cursing and that you can't say. Anyway, we did cross over, we got into this area, and carried on, and we got to an area where the Germans obviously had heard us, and they gave a pasting, and we took casualties. Fortunately, no one dead, but so wounded. And there was in this dried river bed, there was this area of spinneys, as a ground, ever so quick out there with the quick growth of stuff. And we were in that area, and I don't know why we got into it. So sort of cover you do. So you couldn't be seen. And the Germans knew we were in it. But they never came and thrust us out. We could hear they'd been at the vino. No, you could hear they'd got vino and they were in a drunken sort of state. They obviously had thought, oh, we'll leave them till the morning and we'll go and get them. When we laid up in this spinney and they never came, basically they'd got us as prisoners but hadn't got us, if you got what I mean. And anyway, no one, they made no further. We could hear them enjoying themselves and we could hear their guttural voices as they drank their vino and that sort of thing. Of course, a decision had to be made. And anyway, I thought, well, the only thing is, we weren't all that far away from this side of the hill where, of course, the company would still be dug in. So the obvious thing was to try and get the wounded back, which we had. That gradually diminished the number of blokes that were being left there, silently bring through this swag and pulling them instead of getting up and, you know, sort of. We got all our wounded away, and then, I mean, eventually, out of the platoon, which had been a full platoon of 30 people, we'd been made up over in Cairo and that, eventually, it just left myself. And most of sort of platoon headquarters that had gone out with us left there, and the streaks of daylight were beginning to come over the hill, and I thought, well, we've got to get back ourselves. We didn't know, presumably we'd sent them back, we didn't know whether they'd arrived back or out with the company, but that's the and we started calling back ourselves, and eventually got back to the road, and we made a quick and a hefty run across the road and back into the hedges and the bushes on this side where the company was dug in slit trenches and that. And just as we were getting up, and there's this corporal, he was the last one getting up off the road, just as he was getting up through this hedge, a sniper must have caught sight of him and shot him in the back dead. Lovely sound. So basically, I'd lost one killed there. And of course, we couldn't retrieve his body because, of course, he had to get up. So if we'd gone there, they'd been washing all that area, wouldn't they? And got back into the company area, you know, to a company commander, Stan Warner, just so happy to see, you know, most of his captain and his platoon back again. That went on, and that went on, went on, and eventually, of course, they got an artillery officer up for spotting. Eventually, the tower, because it caused so much trouble, they had this OP up there. One day, this gunner, he says, today, he says, they're going to cut that off. The shell in it hadn't seemed to have gotten near it or anything. And there, he said, out at sea, at maximum range, I don't know whether it was HMS Ramillies, it was one of those big battleships. All the Corps artillery and divisional artillery, he said, are going to fire all at the same time at that. And he said, well, we had a grandstand view, you know, peering out of there. And these shells from the battleship, they sort of soared it. Oh, and at the top of the spout, of course, that done away with the Jerry's OP, Gunner's OP. Now, we'd been there, and that stage, we were there about a fortnight in this air, while the battle was still going, in which, on the first day, we should have been 30 miles up. We were relieved there, and went back. And 169 Brigade came up and took that, right? And a bit later on, and it was well over a fortnight before that area was cleared. And this German said they couldn't. Of course, they'd drawn in lots of their crack troops in the meantime. He says at the time in which Scott Elliott and our people have put in their attack, He says, if the jurors couldn't understand, if only they'd moved it on, forget Germano, forget Croce, get on. He said, we had so few troops there, yes, you'd achieve that. But they couldn't understand that our generals and our people, of course, no one has to know that, see. But of course, and in the meantime, the people in that area, when we went back to Germany in 1999, the people in that area that had gone back to their places and back to their all the living, they called that, they thought and said that was their casino of the Gothic line. Well, now we're getting on a bit now. Now, of course, from now on, of course, it was a question of small battles, big battles, rest periods, on and on and on. And I think I better skip now and come to, eventually we got up to North Italy, and the only other things which were now was the Argenta Gap, which was the Lake Comaccio thing, and of course the Po crossing where it finished. So I think I better cut down now and relate those two bits. Now the Argenta Gap, there's this big lake. In the meantime, 169 Brigade had been withdrawn from the division or air and taken back, and these alligators, crocodiles, had come into me, and the whole of 169 Brigade with the Three Queens battalions had been taken back to one of the other lakes back for training. And well, this was something new, and they were going to be the people that would, after the isthmus was taken and the commanders had come in and had cleared the island, lots and lots of islands in the Lake Comaccio, little islands with rushes and that sort of thing, and this isthmus right up the side, and just this one narrow isthmus up the side from the Adriatic and that sort of thing, and the town of Comaccio at the end. But that was going to be taken, and the idea of the battle was to take that, the isthmus up there with 24th Guards Brigade, and the two commando brigade were going to go up, and that included that Larsen, the Norwegian special boat officer and that, and his little gang. And then when they'd done that, the 169 Brigade in these crocodiles and that would come and cross the lake so that we could get right behind the Germans more north, while the 5th Army and part of 8th Army were coming up there, they'd get round the back that way. Right, well, at the time, just at this time, we were out resting, and I always remember at this particular stage we got a new company commander and a major for Garth, I think, Major Chard, and he was called up. We were resting in this little village. We'd been out, come out of the line, and he was called up to battalion. Battalion could be miles away because you were seldom ever together as a battalion. It'd be a company or a platoon there, and the others would probably be miles away. And Major Chard, he came back, and he said, Sergeant Major, he said, I'm leaving you. He said, I'm going to Greece. He spoke he was a terrific linguist. He says, I'm joining Major, current General Scobies, I think he said, yeah, General Scobies. headquarters. He said, so I should be leaving you. He said, but there's a special job coming off, he said. I volunteered the company to do it. He said, there'll be another officer, Major Collier, coming to take over. This Major Collier was a Rhodesian officer. And in the Fusiliers, we at some stage always had, or seemed to have, some Rhodesians, either one or two, seconded.